Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the Blazer Banter podcast. This week we had on Marco Romo. Marco's a big Miami Heat fan, and he's also a very vocal member of the basketball Twitter community. You can find him at Marco_Romo. And we talked about the Miami Heat. We picked his brain a little bit about what's going on with them. Blazers play the Heat on Thursday on TNT. And we also talked about the big trade that went down this week. So I hope you enjoy. Stuff, but got some good sleep and feeling good. So Blazers play the Heat this week. Obviously, there were some changes.
Mm-hmm. A lot of changes.
Yeah. So how's that been going so far?
Not well. In terms of how they've been able to adapt, it really hurt them, especially. With LeBron's point guard ability, because right now that's where they're really hurting, is in terms of playmaking. It's not that Dwayne's not a capable playmaker. He's one of the better playmakers really in the league still in terms of shooting guards. He's just been having to carry more of a load in terms of passing the ball, especially with Josh McRoberts now for the season, which hurts them even more. So right now he's like their main point guard. And behind him, it's Mario Chalmers, and he's been struggling all year.
When did McBob go down? I remember he was dealing with injuries for a little bit. But, yeah, when did he go down? Was that a couple of weeks ago? I feel like he barely played at all.
Yeah, I think it was only played about 4 weeks. At the beginning, it was a toe injury. He was out for about the first few weeks of the season. He came back. He really never got into the flow of the offense. And whenever he started getting into the flow, that's whenever the injury hit, which really, really hurts him. He went down it was during the Phoenix game. It was at the end of it. They had kind of wrapped up the game, but he was just out there kind of just make sure it was wrapped up for real. And that's when he got hurt, and that makes it even worse. And then the next day they heard it was a tear and that he was out for the year.
Yeah, that's a bummer because I liked that signing. Like, it was before even LeBron had made the decision. I was like, oh, nice, they got another playmaker. Like, I was like, yeah, I'd love to see McRoberts in Spoelstra's system. But, yeah, that's a major bummer. Also, can we talk about the YouTube video? I know it's irrelevant to this season, but you'd obviously welcome LeBron back.
Yeah.
But isn't it kind of, I mean, you see they just traded Deion Waiters yesterday, and it's just like, if he wants to come back already, why did he leave in the first place?
that's what, I was listening to the Lebertard show just recently. They were talking about why he left in the first place, which is really that he wanted the power in Cleveland, which I don't agree with. I still believe that he wanted to, like, go home, which I'm okay with, which not many Heat fans are okay with, even though, you know, they welcomed him, like, really well and, you know, had a standing ovation in the video. But if he left because – I still feel like because he wanted to go home, and I don't think he's coming back. This is just a bunch of, like, noise with the whole Dwayne Wade whispering whole thing and all that.
And yeah, it's just really interesting. I mean, they still could make the playoffs, but I mean, do they
It's
win
the
a
East.
game? Do they win a game if they
In the
even get in?
playoffs?
Yeah. Like, I don't know. Maybe one.
Yeah, this team, I feel like at least the game. I think they, I don't know if they get swept. They have too much pride within themselves. Because Dwayne, I remember the 09 series against the Celtics, I believe it was. Or, no, it was 2010. He didn't let them get swept, even though they eventually was a gentleman's sweep. But I feel like they have too much pride not to get one game, at least in the playoffs.
Yeah, and Bosch, you'd think Bosch would be able to, get some win some games in the playoffs as well. I mean, he hasn't been completely healthy this year, but I mean, his numbers look good when he has played. I mean, he's played most of the season though.
Yeah,
How does he look?
the
I mean,
injury.
yeah. Oh, excuse me. Yeah.
The injuries have, like, you talk about the Chris hasn't been healthy all year. The injuries are, he was at about, I think, 7 games, 8 games. I don't remember quite exactly, but that's hurt them as well. The continuity, you know the word. But
Continuity.
continuity, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry about that. Well, that's hurt them all year. They had about, I think, the most, third most, different starting lineups in the league, which is, I think, behind the Knicks and the Timberwolves. And that's really hurt them a lot. They have not been able to have a consistent starting lineup to right now at this point. I think they probably have one, which is, Bird, Bosch, Wade, Deng, and Chalmers. And that's probably the lineup they're going to go from now on. And that's really been the problem for them is finding a key lineup to go with and a bench as well, which has also been trouble for them.
I know he was LeBron's pick, but how is Shabazz Napier doing in off the bench? I mean, he has played some minutes, but not anywhere near as many as Cole or Mario.
Yeah, that's kind of a, that's more of a, he hasn't played a lot. He's in the D League right now. They just ended up calling him back because they're having this West Coast road trip. And right now he's mostly been in the D League more than he's been on an NBA court. I think they really want him to have more minutes out there with the Skyforce along with Dawkins, with who they just released today to make sure that his contract wasn't guaranteed. I think they're going to bring him back for a 10-day contract. But yeah, Shabazz has barely, but I liked what I've seen from him. He has really, really great playmaking ability. It's just, he's had really bad trouble with turnovers. The shooting at the beginning of the year was like not good at all, but he really got into a groove recently, with his shooting. But yeah, they just want him to get minutes in the D League right now. Spo doesn't play rookies a lot. He's played James Ennis, more than I thought he would this year, which has been, great for his development. But he hasn't been really getting the opportunities with the lineups. I think he'll find a role for himself, especially I don't know how. I feel like Cole should be down in the development league. But yeah, I
Is
think
real
Shabazz.
you're so you're not on Team Norris Cole right now.
No, I think they should, much like what the Cavs did with Deion, just cut their losses and probably trade him. I think they eventually will trade him.
What do you see with him that you, I mean, aside from, is there stuff like, well, I mean, are you comparing it to Dion as in like he looks like pouty on the court sometimes or like, I mean, I really have not seen hardly any Miami Heat games. So
It's
like
not about him being proud. He's like, he's not that type of guy at all. It's just about the, they've had patience with his ability to play. Of course, his defense has been something they can hang on, their hat on, but he hasn't been even there this year. He's shooting 27% from three this year, which is not good at all. Or actually, it's 25%,
oof.
which is terrible. I think he's shooting 2% better than Josh Smith right now. It's not that Mario Chalmers has been any better. He's shooting 29% from that range. So it's really been a problem. He's had trouble with the ball recently, a lot of turnovers especially. And it's really kind of the whole wanting me to trade him. It's more about, let's say, with Dion, they've had their patience with him. They've gone through everything really they have probably tried, and probably now it's time to cut their losses and trade him. for maybe a pick or somebody, a wing.
Dion, that trade was very interesting.
Yeah,
Like,
I don't really
I don't
get it.
know. I don't know. I just feel like they just moved a bunch of different parts and we're just like hoping that, like, I think all the teams involved are like, yeah, let's just hope a change of scenery does the job. But I feel like J.R. Smith is just like an evolved version of Dion.
Yeah, that's perfect actually. I feel like it's a trade where nothing really happened. Nothing changed. I think the
Right.
only thing that really changed was that the Cavs really just got Shump, which Shump hasn't been that good either since really the injury he sustained, the ACL tear. And I don't think he's gonna add as much. I think he's a restricted free agent after this year, and I don't think he'll do some more than I think Dion did on the defensive end at least, and JR. He'll do about the same as Dion did. And I don't think it really did much for either team or all three teams on this thing, except that the Knicks also got that word they like, cap space.
Yeah, exactly. And the Knicks got a pick, which
That never happens.
I've
No one's
never
ever
heard
giving them
that
away.
before. Yeah, I can't remember a trade in my lifetime where the New York Knicks. I mean, all of Knicks Twitter last night was, going nuts about that trade. But it's still, yeah, no. The Zen Master is coming in, coming above the fray and snatching that pick right out. But I mean, I don't know. And then I guess
The
I
first
just don't
time I heard it
I
when Reggie Jackson was going to New York, which was first reported, I
I
thought
thought
that
that
was
was just
gonna,
like slam
yeah.
dunk. Like, I thought that was over. I thought it was like an amazing trade by the Knicks. The pick is nice, but getting Reggie Jackson would have been better.
Well, yeah, he would have been a rental for like I think probably 1 year. Reggie would have been out of there. But still, it would have been not bad to get him for and see if they would have maybe developed something with him.
They probably would have matched. I would have assumed if they would have given up all those assets. I think they had the power to match because I think he's restricted. So,
Yeah, he is. I don't know if they would have, would they have kept him or would have tried as hard to keep him?
I think they would have kept him because I mean if they had him restricted, they would have just I think they just wanted to get him. I mean they should have, and apparently I read some reports too that they're going to keep trying to get him again. But I don't know what they would give up to get him. Like, are they going to give Oklahoma City back their first round pick? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't understand. But also, I think
That would be very next.
if Oklahoma City had traded Dion Wade, I had traded the had traded Reggie Jackson, I think that trade would have been awful. Like, I would have just been like, all right, KD's going to DC. Like, as soon as possible, if they had given up Reggie Jackson. So, I guess for Oklahoma City's perspective, it was very good on their part to not get rid of them because I
Yeah,
just.
they would have been really shorthanded the playmaking ability in terms of the second group they have. They would have been down to Sebastian Telfer and Ish Smith.
Yeah, well, I think they cut Sebastian Telfair, actually.
Oh yeah, you're right.
They
It's just his contract's still on the
right,
books with
right.
them,
He's st
actually.
Yeah, he's still on the books, but I. It's gonna be funny. One of my friends texted me this, and it was, he said, I can't wait until KD is on the floor with Reggie Jackson, Westbrook, and Dion Waiters, because he will never touch the ball.
I was thinking the exact same thing yesterday, and I was like, wow, that's going to be hilarious. Except I didn't think about KD being out there. I just thought about the ball kind of like spontaneously combusting.
Yeah, the ball's just gonna Dion and Russell and Reggie Jackson are gonna be on the court, and the ball's just gonna disappear because
Yeah.
there's just so much energy geared towards the ball. That's gonna be so much
Exactly.
fun. Like, that team is Dion and Russell Westbrook, if they're ever on the court together, is gonna be league pass alert. And I cannot wait for the first reports, even though the Thunder are really good at keeping things very quiet. I mean, as you saw yesterday, whenever the Thunder,
Yeah.
like, with the details were leaking out just like little by little. They never like let anything out. But if it was maybe another team, I wish we could hear like you know, Deion Waiters and Russell Westbrook got into it at practice on Thursday or whatever. And it's just like, oh my gosh, it's gonna be
especially
so,
in the playoffs. It's gonna be really entertaining.
Oh my gosh,
in terms of a 1-8 seed.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Well, like imagine the Thunder coming in as an 8 seed, playing the Warriors, and then like, you're counting on Deion Waiters basically to win you that series, to be like a huge player for you coming off the bench.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. And Oklahoma City's clearly not going to pay the tax either. Like, I mean, they're good to go, like, with Jackson and Waiters if they can't, you know, if they want to this year, they can go all the way. But, like, they brought in Waiters clearly. I mean, just by looking at it, you could just do the math. It clearly looks like they don't want to keep Reggie Jackson.
Yeah.
And
they really want Waiters to become their next bench guy, kind of like what Katie said, to be the next Harden. goodness, Harden. Yeah,
that's a good really one, bad. KD.
Schumann did tweet out this stat about Deion. He's shooting on catch and shoot. Field goal percentage and effective field goal percentage are 27% and 37%, is worse than last year when he was about 40 and 50.
I hated watching. I mean, here's the thing. I don't hate Deion Waiters. Like, I do hate, like, watching him play and, like, his body language. But, like, if he's feeling good, if he's, like, got the confidence that he could, like, I've seen good Deion Waiters. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I do understand that there is a good Deion Waiters and there's the Deion Waiters that just got traded. But, like, you know, maybe it's a head thing. I don't know. Maybe it's a scenery thing. Maybe it's a he hated Kyrie thing. I don't know. But, like, it's a big risk. And, like, Oklahoma City, I mean, they're going to make the playoffs. They're currently in 10th place. They are 2 games back in the loss column of the Suns, who are currently in 8th place. But I mean, there's nothing guaranteed, you know, obviously, but they're going to make the playoffs, but they're going to have to play the Warriors or somebody or Memphis. And, I mean, I just, it's going to be really interesting to see what they do there because I don't really like it. I don't like trusting your championship hopes in Deion Waiters. I don't know.
I don't feel as comfortable as many people do about them maybe upsetting a number one seed because they're barely in the playoffs right now. But I don't feel as comfortable with other people about how they'll be able to play with the Warriors or Memphis or a team like that.
I've seen them play that, like, that one half that they played against the Warriors was, like, really good before KD hurt his ankle. Like a few weeks back before he re-injured himself. But
their defense was kind of getting lit up during that game too.
Yeah, and I think against really good teams, I think that they could be exposed. I mean, they played Portland really well without KD. The Blazers obviously don't have Lopez, and Aldridge was sick as a dog in that game. But there's something about that other wing position that Roberson basically, like, I feel like they're trying to get away with that position not being able to shoot. And I don't understand how at this stage of seeing the KD and Russ thing and having a guy next to them that almost always cannot shoot threes, I don't understand by how at this point, I mean, maybe Anthony Morrow will play those minutes, but
I know he's a better, had a tough time there because he's always been able to shoot. He's just never been able to defend.
Right.
They've never been able to find that guy who can do both. Thabo was the closest his first few seasons there, but then he kind of really tailed off whenever his shooting tailed off and his defense really kind of fell off too.
Yeah, and, well, Thabo's found new life in Atlanta,
yeah.
Who are just, you know, the darlings of – I mean, they're a really great team, really good team. Like, they could – I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they win the East. I mean, that if they stay healthy, they could totally win the East.
Here's my thing with Atlanta. yes, they maybe because it's the East. I feel like they can win the East. I don't feel like trusting them again. I've trusted them too many times throughout my NBA watching days. I thought they were going to beat the Pacers last year, and the year
they
before,
almost did though.
Yeah, that's it. I thought they were just going to seal it in Game Six. You know, Horford was out there, so I didn't feel that comfortable either way. But I don't know about the Hawks in the playoffs. It's a lot of about matchups in the playoffs. And in terms of how they match up, they match up, of course, well. They're going to get through the first round. The second round, I feel like, who would they play? They play like a, they
Washington,
probably play a Cavs team.
Yeah,
or
Washington or Cleveland or
that's
Toronto.
That's right there. That's
Washington?
I don't know. Yes. I feel like against Washington team, in terms of how they've had playoff success already together, I feel like maybe they'd probably struggle against them, but again, I feel like they could win the East, and I could also feel like they lose in the second round.
Yeah.
But right now, they're playing out of their minds, which is like, I think they're 20-2 over their past 22 games.
And Millsap and Horford and Teague have been playing like stars, but yeah, in a Washington series, those matchups are going to be really good. Like, an Atlanta-Washington series would be awesome to watch. Yeah. John Wall, Beal, Beal and Korver going at it, like the Nene and Gortat against Millsap and Horford, like that. The East is kind of garbage, but
top they're really, really good.
Yeah,
they've been really good against the West, weirdly enough, like the top with Toronto and Atlanta.
The top five teams in the, top four teams in the East. I like all those teams. And Cleveland is just – I think Cleveland could lose in the first round. Like, I don't even think that's hyperbole right now. Like,
no, not at all.
They – like
– They're where they're at right now. That's all they're worried about. I think they should just accept they're going to be a 5 seed. They can't probably get any worse. The Milwaukee's, like, running their tail right now. But I feel like 5 is – that's where they're at right now. They're not going to move – any higher. Maybe they're going to move lower, but right now I feel like they're a 5 seed. They probably need to accept it. Just kind of keep, probably right now they have to look forward to the playoffs.
They should probably just
everyone
rest.
Everyone healthy.
Yeah, they should probably just rest LeBron a little bit more, like, because they'll
just try to find the, in terms of just try to find an offense that fits everybody right now.
Yeah. That's, the offense thing is funny because, everybody that watches David Blatt film, or that has seen David Blatt's teams play before with like that Princeton, with like a Princeton style offense with lots of back cuts and things like that. Like, that's clearly not what they're doing.
No.
And it's very, but the problem is that yes, you want them to find an offense, but it doesn't seem like Blatt has
total control of what they're trying to do.
Right. And, like, it seemed like it was very clear and that Spoelstra, at least late, in the second time around, it was very clear that Spoelstra had, like, a very clear idea and communicated that, at least from the outside, it looked like he communicated very well what he wanted to do to LeBron. And LeBron was like, okay, I got it. You know what I mean? Like
it really kind of helped Coach Spo that he had Pat Riley backing them whenever everybody was like questioning this or that. But Pat was always had his back, and LeBron always has a lot of respect for Pat, of course, and he in return had a lot of respect for Spo.
I saw that David Griffin came out and said that Blatt's gonna be the coach and stuff, but I mean, if LeBron. LeBron just clearly is running the show in some form, because Dion is the guy that everyone wanted out, and that he was always looking at him with a little side eye. It's like, I mean,
clapping for the ball.
Yeah, clapping for the ball and all that stuff. But
and you see that with the signings that they kind of made, the Mike Miller, the James Jones. Those are guys he always wanted to see get more minutes in Miami, and that's why probably Cleveland signed those guys, Sean Marion, because he always really wanted to play with a guy like Sean Marion, even though Sean's kind of like pretty much done for his career right now. He is what he is.
Yeah, he's washed. I mean, he's gonna be a Hall of Famer, but he's washed up right now. Like, yeah, he's not good anymore. You know, not trying to disrespect one of the greats. You know, the Matrix, obviously. But
I've had bad experiences with him. This is like the Sean Marion I saw in Miami, but even worse.
I forgot
that he was there.
Like,
that's how bad it was. You forgot he was there, and also with Toronto, because he wasn't good with Toronto either. He just never really found a way to fit into what Miami tried to run. Back then was really more of a defensive focus, and even then he really kind of struggled with the kind of philosophy they ran. And the offense, he just looked lost a bunch in terms of what they tried to do with him. They just tried to fit him into a Quentin Richardson role. Until they found a Quentin Richardson to replace him, that's whenever he was done there.
Quentin Richardson, man. The guy who got traded like 4 times in one summer.
Yeah, that was the summer that he got him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's what – they revived his career that year. It was pretty crazy how they did it. And then he ended up getting another contract after that with Orlando, where he didn't succeed there. He just – played well in Miami. Coach Spo really found a way with him, just like he's finding it this year with Sean Williams. He's shooting 42% from three this year.
That guy's a good coach. I really love Eric Spoelstra. I mean, a lot of people hated on him, you know, but I think a lot of the people who were watching the Miami Heat very closely over the past few years obviously have a lot of respect for Spo's coaching.
Which is another reason I think they probably can win a playoff game this year.
Yeah, that's a good point. That he's got, you know, a little bit probably more playoff experience than some other coaches. Obviously, he's made so many more deep runs than all these other coaches in the East. The Bulls still seem to me, I still think that they're the best team in the East when they're all healthy and at their best. Because Jimmy Butler is just like a real, like an all-star. He really is an all-star.
And yeah, I think he's a lock to win MIP, and if not him, Draymond Green. But I feel like he's a lock to win that award.
Draymond, I mean, I saw quite a few people talking about him as an all-star. I mean, I don't think that that's a very far off. I mean, he's been, from what I've seen, he's been the second best small forward besides Kevin Durant in the West.
This year.
I think he's
okay.
Batum's been garbage this year compared to what he's been.
Kawhi's been hurt.
Right. And Kawhi's been hurt. And Gordon Hayward, his usage rate is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Do you ever watch the end of Jazz games? Like,
weirdly enough, I've watched more Jazz this year than I probably would like to, but mostly due to Rudy Gobert and Dante Exum, because I really like those two guys. But yeah, I've seen how much he kind of gets the ball and really kind of – they just ISO him like way too much.
It's ridiculous. Like, they have like this – I was talking about this with a colleague of mine, Mike Richmond from the Oregonian, and he was talking about how, you know, it's like, you know, Quinn Snyder is like this offensive innovator, and like – they're throwing the ball around. I think for a while they were like leading the league in passes per game. And then at the end of game, they just like here, Gordon, like just dribble the ball around and try and find a shot. And like, I was watching their Clippers game a few weeks ago. It was a close game. And he's dribbling the ball. He goes off the pick and roll, and then he dribbles it backwards to do another just straight pick and roll. There's no other actions going on. There's no one like setting a flare screen on the weak side. Like, it's just like, what is going on? I have, like, it's just the weirdest thing to see, you know, them just play the way they do by just like giving Gordon the ball and just tell him, just, you know, go shoot and save us.
It's like more of a Cleveland with LeBron thing, except he's not LeBron. What they're trying to do.
What are you saying?
And I've seen what they play with, how they play. They really do, because I saw the Heat game they played in Miami. They really do pass the ball really well for three quarters and a half, but then that end of the fourth, they just really kind of fall apart. They ended up winning that Miami game because they were up by so much, but it really just kind of gets stalemate at the end there. I think Quinn Snyder's done a good job with what he's gotten. He just he probably needs to cut down on the ISOs at the end. But that's more probably on the players not really buying into the system at the end of games. But I don't really know.
I'm just looking here because I'm curious what their offensive rating is. It's like average in the last five. They're 12th, I think, overall. And then I just looked in the NBA clutch stats, and they're like right above Miami for clutch offensive rating. So they're still scoring at a pretty okay rate, but they're not scoring at a very good rate. You know, they're not anywhere near the top of the league with that strategy. But they, I mean, it's a weird team because they have to be tanking if they're not playing Gobert as many minutes as they are. Like they have to be.
Yeah. That's a weird situation they actually have with Gobert. If they're going to be willing to sign Enes Kanter back, which I think they maybe will look to do that and probably either bring Gobert back or they're going to let Enes go. But I think they'll probably keep both of those guys.
I mean, you need two big – you need multiple bigs and to win in the playoffs. And it makes sense to keep them both. It just depends
– on the money, really. That's what they're
exactly
talking about.
Yeah, it really depends on the money. I don't know who gives Kanter a big deal considering it doesn't seem like they play very good defense when he's on the court. So he's not really – I mean, Favors to me is more of the anchor to that defense than Kanter when they're both out there. And then Gobert's they lock people down when Gobert's out there, but they just never play him. I don't really get it.
I don't really either. Just another probably reason you mentioned that they're tanking.
Oh, totally. Well, the Lakers. Speaking of tanking, the Lakers were in town last night, and that team. I just love the rhetoric that comes from their front office that like the Lakers can't tank, and like. This is the most blatant tank job, or not the most blatant tank job, but it's pretty clearly a tank job when you look at the roster.
Yeah, when you're playing Wesley Johnson consistent minutes, people are going to accuse you of tanking.
They play Boozer, obviously, like, Boozer's probably going to get, but, like, you know Boozer's not, like, a really, you know, productive NBA player. At this stage of his career.
No. Not at all.
And he's playing, you know, a ton of minutes. I mean, Ronnie Price is – I mean, he's just not very good.
He's their starting point guard.
And Portland waived him a few years ago, like, because he couldn't play backup point guard for Damian Lillard. Like, I mean, he's definitely shooting better than I think he ever has from the three-point line at almost 33%. Like, I'm pretty sure that's a career year for him. And Ryan Kelly was their starting small forward last night.
And that's probably their best option there, really, when you kind of look at the roster. After Julius Randle went down, they really went into super tank mode after that. Because if they don't get a top five pick, they're going to owe that to Phoenix. I don't really know what Phoenix might do with that pick. But, yeah, they're going to probably owe that, which is why they're really going hard at that tanking.
Detroit, I have not seen any of Detroit since the Josh Smith trade. But they have won five games in a row now.
It's Jody Meeks. Jody Meeks.
Is Meeks back? Okay, Meeks has been back for a little bit.
Yeah, I think he's shooting about – I think he's hit 17 of his last 25 from three.
And everyone was hating on SCG for that contract.
Yeah, I pretty much just kind of questioned. I didn't really hate it. I just like, okay, that's okay. I guess that's kind of like a signing. That's just a sign. I thought just to sign somebody, but it's worked out well for them. So right now, I think they're about four or five games behind the 8 seed right now.
Wow! If Detroit makes the playoffs, that would be hilarious. After it's just It's so funny
after the Josh Smith thing. If they just go off, maybe break the win streak record, have about 38 games in a row.
Yeah, no, watch out. You know, my 2012 Miami Heat. The
exactly
SVG and the Pistons are coming for you. They have Anthony Tolliver now.
They do. I had no idea he got waived by Phoenix, I think.
Remember when I think it was. I love the internet, and I love the optimism that the internet has all towards basketball and all, you know, a lot of the players. But I remember, like, one of the – there was one – I forget who it was or where it came from, but it was like a shot chart showing, like, where Anthony Tolliver shot and, like, using that shot chart as proof that Anthony Tolliver could replace Channing Frye.
Oh, yeah. No. And I like Anthony a lot, but he's not going to replace what Channing did for them, which was a big who could stretch the floor consistently and
that Channing a really super quick release.
Yeah,
like yeah. Anthony.
Goran is the one that really misses him a lot because they ran that Goran and Frye pick and roll to death last year.
Oh, and it was deadly. I mean, Channing Frye was probably the biggest. He was the biggest matchup problem. Like, for the Blazers last year in the regular season, I think Phoenix gave them more trouble than anybody in the league. And it was because of Channing Frye. Like, Frye, just like any time the Blazers would face, like, or any team faces a guy like Frye, like, you just, it completely changes your whole defense. Like, what all these pick and roll schemes where, you know, like, because you have to get out on him so hard. And it's crazy that they, you know, Phoenix is still playing, you know, they're still in the playoff race without him. I think that's pretty impressive that they've managed to survive so long.
He was kind of like their Chris Bosh last year in terms of how they played him with those pick and rolls on the wings, just kind of made matchup problems for everybody.
But good for Frye. He got a pretty large contract, especially after that. That heart issue that he had a few years ago, which was pretty scary.
Which is why I thought it was just fine with him taking the money. I really didn't care what he signed. I'm just glad he got a contract.
Yeah, no, like, good for him, most definitely. Blazers play Orlando this week. Do you watch any of the Magic? I haven't seen it. They're a pretty fun team. Speaking of Channing Frye.
Yeah, they're a pretty fun team. If you watch them, they kind of really play any team they play them pretty close. They've been the only team that recently has beat the Hawks outside of the Bucks. And they really do play a pretty, in terms of since they got an Oladipo back, they really are kind of spread you out with how they play and have Vucevic and Tobias kind of pound you down low. And they really play a pretty, free-flowing style, especially with Fournier, the way he plays, which is a lot of driving, dish and go. And they really kind of play close for three quarters, and about the fourth, they just kind of fall apart.
I've seen about three Magic games this year. And in those games, though, Oladipo, I was a believer in Oladipo last year. I thought he should have won the Rookie of the Year over Michael Carter-Williams, but he looks even better this year, and, like, he's getting pretty good at attacking the basket. His off-the-dribble game looks like it's really improved, and I like what I see from Oladipo when I have seen him, and Evan Fournier's stats look good. I haven't really seen enough of Fournier to judge that. He didn't look too good in the FIBA World Cup when I watched him, but obviously he's... he's flourishing in Orlando.
Oladipo, I feel like he has had less of a burden to kind of handle the ball this year since they brought in Fournier. They still play him a lot at point guard, which I don't like a lot. I thought it was good for his rookie year, get him a little bit in there because they really were pretty steep at the point guard position. But he's gotten really good at finishing around the rim, the way he's kind of just learn how to really be patient with be going off a pick and roll and not trying to go at the rim every time. But, yeah, Fournier's numbers do look good. It's just that it's kind of a love-hate relationship from my scene from Magic fans. they like it whenever he's going at the rim at certain times. Sometimes he can be really reckless and really turn the ball over. He doesn't know what to do when he's up in the air in those situations when he gets inside. And sometimes he just can't shoot, and sometimes it looks like he can make every shot. So he's a really inconsistent kind of player, but I think he's been playing okay, pretty much.
I agree with you that the Oladipo at point guard thing is not a productive. I mean, it was good for his rookie year. Plus, it allowed them to tank a little bit more. You know, you get him, you just, you know, if he turns the ball over, whatever, it doesn't really matter because they weren't trying to win last year.
Yeah.
And
now they have Elfrid Payton, which helps a lot.
He's right.
Really a good passer in terms of how he plays.
Yeah. Only problem with Payton is he can't really shoot yet. And that's an issue. But
if you're a point guard in the NBA, you have to, if you can't shoot, you have to be a good passer, which he is, which he has that, but he's going to have to learn eventually that. Hit a jump shot.
You got to be a good passer, and you got to be able to guard, like, you got to be able to guard two guards or something to make up for the fact that you can't.
Which is how Rondo and Kidd really went throughout their whole early careers.
Right, exactly. Like Rondo can guard twos, so that, like, if you can make it up in another area, then, you know, it's kind of passable, but. As the league is going towards, you know, it's just continuing to go in the direction that it's going, where, you know, you have to be able to shoot basically to be on the court. It's going to be weird. I feel like I'm interested to see where the evolution of the league goes, where, like, do you have to be able to shoot, like, you know, 30% at least to be on the court, you know, in the future? But there are ways to make it up, I guess, but. Because there's not that many great shooters. But Ben Gordon also, I remember I personally was clowning on that contract. You know, they gave him $18 million or something ridiculous. Or no, they gave him $9 million for 2 years.
Still ridiculous.
Still ridiculous, considering he was waived for he was waived by, you know, the Bobcats. You know, basically just told to go home.
Yeah. He's been playing surprisingly. I think his three-point percentage is, like, really good this year, which is surprising me.
Yeah, no, I think I saw David Thorpe, you know, write the other day that he'd been, that, you know, Ben Gordon's really been revived, I guess. But so good, you know, good for Ben Gordon. I'm glad. I mean, I think everybody who has watched basketball for the last, you know, few years, you know, remembers good Ben Gordon from those Chicago teams. You know, just going off basically before he went to Detroit were all good memories. And then he went to Detroit and it was just a dumpster fire.
Yeah. I just saw the numbers right now. He's shooting, overall it's 47 and 41% from three, which is pretty good, especially on the team he's on.
And they have the all rookie thirst team captain, Aaron Gordon.
And we haven't seen a lot of him because the injuries, of course. But from what I've seen from him, I think I really like what I've seen from Aaron Gordon. And I like a lot of their bigs, like Vucci Man, shout out Nick Vucevic, and Tobias Harris.
Yeah, Tobias Harris, didn't he get into it with LeBron earlier this year or something like that? Like,
I think it was a week ago. It was after the Miami. It's like 2 days after Christmas.
Right, yeah.
After they were playing in Orlando. The Magic I think they were winning pretty good, like four during the third quarter. They were up a pretty good amount, about 8 points. And then he just started telling LeBron not to flop or quit flopping pretty much. You could read his lips on the video if you see it. And LeBron said he got out of chill mode and just kind of got in and really took over the game, which is, I feel like, that was the last time we saw like that type of LeBron.
Okay, I know there's been a lot of, and he's even addressed it, but it's pretty clear that LeBron is a different player.
Yeah.
I just feel like with the athleticism, he feels like a different player.
Yeah, especially with, he's getting older. Of course, he's losing a lot of what he used to have, which was his ability to take guys down low in the post, which was mostly due to his weight loss and also his ability to kind of just go to the rim every time and finish really well. This year he's like shooting like a really bad, for him, a really bad percentage at the rim. I think it's like his worst since his fourth year, I want to say, in Cleveland. But yeah, he's kind of lost a lot of his ability. And I don't know how much is due to that and how much is due to him kind of what I've seen. He's kind of taking a lot of plays off.
Yeah, he's really – he really, like – and it's understandable because we've been so I guess it's understandable because we've been so spoiled with LeBron, you know, playing 36, 38 minutes a game and being spectacular every night for every one of those minutes. And, like, we have been spoiled by that. But, like, I mean – he definitely looks – he doesn't – and, yeah, like, when he was here in Portland, like, he clearly just didn't even care in the fourth quarter. Like, the Blazers just completely were just blowing the game wide open, and he was just, like, not doing anything. And I don't know how much of it was – I mean, I think a lot of it was probably him just, you know – it was him – I mean, he said after the game he was just kind of checking out, but – I'm looking at his percentage according to Basketball Reference around the rim, and it's the worst since his third year.
Yeah.
His field goal percentage from around the rim. It's at 67% right now, and his worst season prior to that was he was at 69%. Nice. and so I. Yeah,
I saw a lot of that last year. It was mostly on defense, which he was taking a lot of plays off last year. I thought many people didn't really notice how it's not just this year that you're seeing his defense fall off. It started last year, and it was pretty apparent that he was losing a lot of his defensive ability.
I wish we had like an algorithm or some kind of equation to like that. Tells us how long it takes for someone's reputation to change. Cause it's like, you watched like every Heat game last, you know, you watched like every Heat game and it's, you know, for someone who doesn't, and then, you know, you notice that he's not trying on defense. And then now we're all seeing that he's like kind of getting moody and kind of taking himself out of games. And it's just, it's kind of funny to see, you know, how long it takes for people to start to realize when things are happening and how they're happening. And you know, the Cleveland stuff, like, as much as they, you know, as much as they're kind of basically not mediocre, but I guess as far as contenders, they're just kind of middling. And but still, they're the most talked about team. Like, they're just the most interesting thing that's happening right now.
And that's one thing at the beginning of the year that I was like kind of really looking forward to whenever LeBron said he was going back, which probably was the only thing I was looking forward to, was all the hoopla that surrounded kind of more LeBron than the team he followed or the team that he was on, and which was a lot of the coverage about this, what's wrong with this, what's wrong with that. And this year it's more appropriate to do that since they have a lot of things wrong with them, which is in the last 4 years it was kind of like less appropriate since they were pretty good.
And they had veterans. Like, yeah. You know, we talked, you know, a lot of people made the point, you know, after the signing happened, and I guess it just kind of got forgotten a little bit. But, like, when you have veterans on your team, like, you know, like, I mean, the difference, you know, someone had made this point before, but, you know, it's pretty easy to see. Like, Bosh and Wade had both been to the playoffs before and lost as the best player on their team, and they had gotten there before. And Kyrie and Love have never been there, and I hate to be that guy, and I know the internet always likes to joke about, like, you know, veteran experience, but it matters. Like, it does. Like, and obviously we are seeing some of those growing pains play out with, you know, even Love, as great as he is, waiters claps and stuff like that, but Love is just as guilty at, like, I watched a play, I talked about this on the last podcast with Robbie, is I saw Love not get a post-entry pass from Deion, and he was jumping up and down outside the restricted area, clapping his hands and throwing a tantrum. And it's like, you know, I didn't ever see that from Chris Bosh, or, you know.
Yeah, and that's what Chris warned him about. You're not going to automatically fit into a team with two other guys that have been the number one guy on their team. He warned him, you're not going to feel comfortable at all when you're going to start. And he has to learn that. He has to learn how to find. If he doesn't, he's going to be out of there by this year. If he's still this unhappy, he's. I feel like if we joked about it early in the year when that 1 year option came, and I think somebody reported that it's more than likely that he'll opt out. We joked that, oh, come on, he's going to leave after 1 year. And
why
right
would
now,
he?
It seems more than a possibility that it'll happen.
Yeah, I mean, he. Like,
it's a lot like the Dwight Howard situation in Los Angeles a few years ago, where nobody thought he probably was going to opt out, and he ended up leaving for Houston.
If he's not happy, like, I mean, it seems like maybe this is true, maybe it's not, but it seems like LeBron, for as you know, as much credit as he gets for being a nice, you know, a team guy, wanting to play a team game and sharing the ball and stuff like that, it seems like he does have a tendency to grate on people also. Like, obviously, Deion Waiters was very happy to get out of there, as we saw in his Instagram with Meek Mill doing some kind of crazy dance. Like, and, you know, he might have the tendency to rub some people the wrong way. And if you are Kevin Love and you're like, I don't need this, I could go to the Lakers and it's my team, and I'm in LA, and, you know, like, it wouldn't surprise me to see him go to the Lakers or, you know, another team that offers him a max deal, because if LeBron, you know, kind of is, if him and LeBron aren't clicking like that, it could be an issue, because he's not best. I mean, Love knew LeBron, but it's not like he was best friends with him like Wade was.
Yeah, it's not at all like a situation there with Wade and Bosh. They're all really close friends.
And they're all in the same draft class. Like, they all came up at the same time. It's completely different. Like, these guys are not from the same era.
Yeah, and I don't know how Cavs fans will feel about if they ended up trading Wiggins for a one-year rental of Kevin Love.
I mean, it was the risk they
took.
Yeah,
they knew what they were going at, but, you know, hindsight is 2020, and right now it's not looking like the best move, but, you know, there's still a lot to go. Like, he could opt back for another year or sign for another 4 years or something, but it's not looking like that at all.
It's kind of funny because they traded for Shump, and, like, I mean, I think they brought him in for defense, but, like, I mean, you see what Wiggins is doing right now, and, I mean, you could see it in – you could see flashes of how good he could be during summer league and in college and stuff like that, and how quick he is and how just athletic he is. And now that the topic of LeBron's, like, you know, his athleticism being sapped a little bit, I mean, it seems like more than ever they would have needed him now. And, like, they go out and get two wing guys, and it's just like, it's like, where are they again? And, you know, there's obviously a lot of speculation that LeBron is the one that's behind these deals. And as smart as he's not,
he's still influencing
all of
the deals.
And as smart as he is, it's not his job. It's not his job.
He doesn't have the best reputation of kind of. He's where the Dwight Howard was with the Turkaloo and all that. He had the Antoine Jameson thing, the Shaq thing.
Yeah, exactly. He brought in Antoine Jameson. He wanted to bring in Michael Redd. I mean, they never brought him in, but, like, you know, that Larry Hughes. Like, you go back and you just look at all the guys that, like, you know, were brought in to be LeBron's guys, basically, like, that weren't already selected by another GM, a.k.a. Pat Riley. Like, they haven't been very good. Like, they haven't worked that well. Obviously, there's still time. Obviously,
the best one
it's still
that's
early.
Worked out for them for LeBron really is the Mike Miller one, and that barely worked out for them. A lot of injuries happened, but it worked out for them in terms of the 3-point shooting they needed at whenever he was healthy. But that's probably the best example I can think of that where it actually worked out, the guy he wanted to sign. And it worked out, of course, in the finals a lot during the Spurs series and the Thunder, but he was hurt a lot. And that's why they amnestied him, because, you know, they wanted to save all that money. And LeBron wasn't happy about that because he really liked Mike. And then it doesn't work out for him in Cleveland, weirdly enough.
It's going to be fun to see, but Marco, I think we've covered a lot of bases on this podcast. So
a lot.
Yeah,
oh, we're in an hour.
Yeah, I know we have. The game, I think it's going to be fun to watch the Bosch LaMarcus matchup. I think it's going to be a closer game than probably it would have been if Portland's bigs were healthy.
It'll be a lot like I feel like I don't know if it'll be like the game last year where actually LeBron didn't play.
Right. But yeah.
I wonder how Miami will take some of the things they did there and try to do what they did last year in terms of playing a lot of Wade and Bosch high pick and roll again.
And that was when Portland was healthy. I think actually if you know after that game. The Blazers really didn't seem like they were the same for the whole rest of that regular season, really, until, like, the last month when they won, like, 9 out of their last 10. Like, I remember the Blazers were, like, 24-5 before that game, I think, or 25-5, some crazy record. And then after Bosch hit that game winner, they were kind of in a lull for, like, 2-3 months. So,
but that's mostly due to, like, the hot start they had.
Yeah, no, it was regression. It was regression. Yeah. But
it was going to come down in terms of – I think their schedule was also pretty rough during that stretch.
Yeah, no, this year they've had a much tougher early schedule. Like, and, you know, they've been – they're really good. But it's going to be funny to see – I mean, I think it's going to be a good game because, you know, Kamen can only play so many minutes. Like, he got completely winded last night, you know, after, like, minute 22. And –
which is, I didn't expect, when you're talking about Chris Kamen, I didn't expect, actually, I feel like Miami probably has the advantage in terms of the backup center.
With Birdman?
In this game. No, it's going to be starting center, Birdman, but okay. Hassan Whiteside is their backup, is this kid that they found. He's really been around the league, kind of bounced around here.
Yeah,
and there.
Yeah, I remember him.
And he's like, Miami has really, really developed him into a really, pretty good player right now. He just had his first double-double. He's averaged, I think, over 10 or 11 rebounds for his first few games here. And they really developed him in the D-League, and he's playing really well. He's the perfect player for what they're trying to find, which is a rim protector, a guy who can finish around the rim. And that's pretty much the guy that they were looking for the past 4 years. And they've been developing him for the past 2 or so years. And they finally got him, but kind of too late for that. But they still really like what they've seen. And he's going to stick there for a while now. He's a centerpiece for those guys.
That's I guess that opens the door for the matchup we've all been waiting for between Hassan Whiteside and Myers Leonard.
Yeah.
Myers Leonard had his second double-double of his career last night against the Lakers.
That's an asterisk.
Right. The Lakers. Yeah, of course. No. Oh, man. Also, the Lakers, as great as Lillard was in that fourth quarter, watching the Lakers' offense completely collapse down the stretch was just – it was basically art. Like, it was so bad. Like – Swaggy was just taking bad shots, and so was Jeremy Lin. Like, Jeremy Lin tried to tie the game with a step-back three-pointer, which, like...
That's classic.
That's not really a Jeremy Lin shot. Like, he tried to...
That's classic Lin. He tries to do that a lot, which is... I don't blame Kobe for not trying to pass him all the time, but that's what Lin used to do a lot, and he hit those shots in Linsanity, but...
Yeah, the Linsanity game winner... But
in terms of the Lakers, it's pretty hilarious sometimes how they kind of like fall apart at the end of games.
Yeah, which is that's just good tanking right there. Like good tank, exactly. Good tanking is you keep the games close and then you lose. Like the Blazers were. I remember the year before they got McCollum because they wanted to get into the lottery. I mean, it looked like they wanted to get into the lottery anyway by, like, all of a sudden benching. They benched, like, Matthews, Batum, and Aldridge for the last 13 games of the season. And, like, that's just how the best way to tank is close losses or the way the Blazers did it where you look like you're going to try and make the playoffs and then you just completely collapse in the last month of the season. But all right, Marco.
Like, there's the Philadelphia of since.
But then there's the Philadelphia one. Then there's the Philadelphia one.
No, we're not even going to try.
Yeah.
There was the one matchup I wanted to talk about, which was the Wesley Matthews and Dwayne Wade one.
Oh,
the
yes,
two Marquette
please.
Guys.
Oh, yeah.
Last year, I think I remember a lot that Dwayne tried to post him up, but it worked to some effect. But Wesley is a pretty good inside post defender, but Dwayne kind of just ended up running more pick and rolls throughout the game anyway. And I wonder how they're going to go at him this game, the two Marquette guys that love to post up each other.
Yeah, that will be fun. And there's something about Marquette guys. Like, Marquette guards are awesome. Like, I mean...
I'm posting up?
Yeah.
Just
overall, Jimmy Butler, Wes, D. Wade, like, there's a lot of good Marquette guards in the league right now.
And that's one thing I always found pretty cool, that they all seem to, like, have some kind of post game. Even Doc Rivers, back when he played, he was a type of point guard that just was kind of like an Andre Miller type.
I'm excited for that game. I think it'll be a better game than it looks on paper, for sure. So
it'll be a TNT game. So
yeah, exactly.
Looking forward to being embarrassed on national TV.
I don't think they will be, but
it'll all depend on the third quarter.
Yeah, and I think some of it too. Matthews last night because Matthews looked like he had like a season-ending injury last night. And
I'm glad he came out of that all right.
Yeah, I mean, it looked really bad, and like even his even like the coaches and his teammates thought it was really bad. And hope you know, for his sake, he might be over that mental hurdle because he said he was kind of thinking about like every move he was making last night, and he looked like he was pushing off that leg that he had hurt. So it looked okay, but. It'd be interesting to see where he is mentally with that, especially in like that's you know along with Aldridge and Bosch, Wade against Wes is another key matchup. So it should be fun to see lots of new faces in new places the next week. Very excited.
Yeah, I hope it's gonna be a good game.
Yeah, I hope so too. It's always more fun to write about a good game. But thanks for coming on, Marco.
All right, thanks for having me, man.
No problem.